Mr. Chairman, delegates, and fellow citizens, the roar of the crowd is deafening. Arms akimbo, as the crowd pushes and shoves in violent excitement, I manage to scribble in my notebook, "Place going absolutely apeshit." It's September 3rd, 2008. I'm at the Excel Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening to the acceptance speech by the new Republican vice presidential nominee, Sarah Palin. The speech is the emotional climax of the entire 2008 presidential campaign, a campaign marked by bouts of rage and incoherent tribalism on both sides of the aisle. After 18 long months covering this dreary business, the whole campaign appears in my mind's eye as one long, protracted scratch fight over internet-fueled nonsense. Like most reporters, I've had to expend all the energy I have just keeping track of who compared whom to Bob Dole, whose minister got caught griping about America on tape, who sent a picture of whom in African ceremonial garb to Matt Drudge. And because of this, I've made it all the way to this historic Palin speech tonight, not having the faintest idea that within 2 weeks from this evening, the American economy will implode in the worst financial disaster since the Great Depression. Like most Americans, I don't know a damn thing about high finance. The rumblings of financial doom have been sounding for months now. The first half of 2008 had already seen the death of Bear Stearns, one of America's top five investment banks, and a second, Lehman Brothers, had lost 73% of its value in the first 6 months of the year and was less than 2 weeks away from a bankruptcy that would trigger the worldwide crisis. Within the same two-week time frame, a third top five investment bank, Merrill Lynch, would sink to the bottom alongside Lehman Brothers, thanks to a hole blown in its side by years of reckless gambling debts. Merrill would be swallowed up in a shady, state-aided backroom shotgun wedding to Bank of America that would never become anything like a major issue in this presidential race. The root cause of all these disasters was the unraveling of a massive Ponzi scheme centered around the American real estate market. A huge bubble of investment fraud that floated the American economy for the better part of a decade. This is a pretty big story, but at the moment I know nothing about it. Take it as a powerful indictment of American journalism that I'm far from alone in this among the campaign press corps charged with covering the 2008 election. None of us understands this stuff. We're all way too busy watching to make sure X candidate keeps his hand over his heart during the Pledge of Allegiance, and Y candidate goes to church as often as he says he does, and so on. Just looking at Palin up on the podium doesn't impress me. She looks like a chief flight attendant on a Piedmont flight from Winston-Salem to Cleveland, with only the bag of almonds and the polyester kerchief missing from the picture. With the junior anti-sex league rimless glasses and half updo with a bumpet, she comes across like she's wearing a cheap Halloween getup McCain's vice presidential search party bought in a bag at Walgreens after midnight. Four-piece costume, pissed-off white suburban female, $19.99 plus tax. Just going by the crude sports writer think that can get any campaign journalist through a whole presidential race from start to finish, if he feels like winging it, my initial conclusion here is that John McCain is desperate, and he's taking one last heave at the end zone by serving up this overmatched electoral gimmick in a ploy for, what, women? Extra horny older married men? Frequent Piedmont flyers? I'm not sure what the end game is, but just going by the McCain campaign's hilariously maladroit strategic performance so far, it can't be very sophisticated. So I figure I'll catch a little of this cookie-cutter political stump act, snatch a few quotes for my magazine piece, then head to the exits and grab a cheesesteak on the way back to the hotel. But will my car still be there when I get out? That's where my head is as Sarah Palin begins her speech. Then I start listening. She starts off reading her credentials. She's got the kid and nephew in uniform, check. Troop of milk-fed patriotic kiddies with Hallmark Channel names, a Bristol, a Willow, and a Piper. A rare Martin Mull caliber whiteness trifecta, check. Mute macho husband on a snow machine, check. This is all standard issue campaign decoration so far, but then she starts in with this thing about Harry Truman.